White people, you are being tapped in to advocate for ethnic minorities, and especially Kamala Harris, but only if you follow some rules about your own white privilege. This was the message over the weekend, and it will continue into the Kamala Harris campaign because they realize they need white voters, but they cannot elevate white voters. Because we must hate white people, right? Because they are neo-racists. So there was a Zoom call this weekend where over 160,000 white women, American women, met to discuss their favorite thing, which is being an ally of oppressed groups. The meeting was organized by Moms Demand Action, which is a gun safety group with 10 million members. And the video included activists, including podcasters and the singer Pink, also regular voters, people who said they regretted just not doing enough in 2016, the election that put Trump in the White House. So they're gonna do something now, and here is what they're gonna do. This video went viral over the weekend because it is just so so obnoxious that it's almost unbelievable. I'm gonna play it for you in its entirety, and then we're gonna break it down. Hold on to your butts.
Ariel Fodor, affectionately known as Mrs. Frazzle to her combined audience of over 1.5 million followers, is here to help gentle parent us through this election.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I am so honored to speak today. I am like shaking to just be among such incredible company. We are here because, as if you were here earlier, you've heard BIPOC women have tapped us in as white women to step up, listen, and get involved this election season. This is a really important time, and we all need to use our voices and influence for the greater good. No matter who you are all influencers in some way. So tonight, I'm going to share some do's and don'ts for getting involved in politics online and navigating the toxicity that comes with it. And spoiler alert, as much as the toxicity can come from the outside, it can come from us too. So first, don't isolate yourself. We can do our best work when we're in community together like we are tonight, because the toxic feels smaller when we support each other. But don't make it about yourself. As white women, we need to use our privilege to make positive changes. If you find yourself talking over or speaking for BIPOC individuals, or God forbid, correcting them, just take a beat. And instead, we can put our listening ears on. So do learn from and amplify the voices of those who have been historically marginalized, and use the privilege you have in order to push for systemic change. As white people, we have a lot to learn and unlearn. So do check your blind spots. You are responsible for your algorithm, believe it or not.
So she get it, everybody?
You could tell she was reading from a script. She wrote that out.
Yeah, and thought that was good. Now, this is very comfortable for me because I don't know if you know this, but I started my TV career on Romper Room when I was 5. This is exactly how you talk to children.
That's what I was going to ask.
Don't know any better.
I was like, how old are the people in this meeting? Because she sounds like she's talking to children.
No, they're all adults. So you want to make sure you want to check your, what did she call them, bio people?
Okay, so here's what she says is that BIPOC women have tapped us in. BIPOC is an acronym for Black, Indigenous, and Other People of Color. So she's saying that those people are allowing white people to speak. Who exactly from the BIPOC community has tapped in white people? I don't know. Who speaks for all BIPOC women that did this tapping in? I don't know. She says that white women should not otherwise have spoke, but we were given permission to speak, so it's okay.
Oh, we're allowed to speak now?
Right, but only if you follow these rules.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, men are coming next. This is coming for you next. I didn't tell you this. That's going to come at the end of this segment. She says that a white person should never, ever correct a person of color. If you find yourself doing that, go sit in the corner for a little bit. Think about what you've done and then come back when you're ready, like a first grader, stop yourself.
Does she give examples of, like, if a Black person is going to make a wrong turn and I want to correct that person? Hey, you're about to drive off a cliff. You're about to make a wrong turn. I don't want you. You shouldn't do that.
No,
I shouldn't correct that person.
No, and in fact,
and also
they're historically marginalized.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure.
And I was going to say it. Obviously, it also excludes the white supremacist Trump supporting Black people.
I suppose. Right. Yeah. If you see a black person voting for Trump, you can correct that person, I would assume. Yeah. Now, why, though? Right. What is the rationale behind a person of color cannot be challenged? It's because these women think that a person of color cannot handle having their feelings hurt due to systemic oppression. That is what these compassionate ladies think. So that in and of itself is racist, to think, oh, I'm sorry, person of color, you can't handle any hurt feelings because you're not a strong person. So I can't hurt your feelings or correct you or challenge you in any way or say anything. For instance, there's data that shows that lawmakers in Chicago realized that Hispanic and black men were getting more traffic tickets due to traffic lights in Chicago. And so they said, well, this is oppressive, so we'll take these out so that Hispanic and black men don't have more traffic violations, and then that will be in the name of equality. Well, what happened? More people died from traffic accidents because a stoplight camera is not racist. It was only capturing licenses and drivers, and that's it. And so a lot of these policies where we're saying, oh, this is for equality, it's for the greater good, it's because there's discrepancy, so there must be racism. Well, they're not well thought through, and people get hurt. So what if you were to say, hey, actually, I would like to put those red light cameras back in to protect people of color. No, 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 no. We can't hurt their feelings.
That's racist.
We can't say things like that.
Like it's defund the police.
Right, yeah. And in fact, one of the comments on this video caught my attention and was spot on. I warn you, this is not politically correct language, but this Twitter user, ex-user, says, why do progressives treat ethnic minorities like they're this word, our words? And I, if you notice my comment there, there actually is research on this, if you care to look. A 2018 study from Yale School of Management shows that liberals patronize racial minorities by dumbing down their language in front of them. Conservatives, on the other hand, don't do this. Do you find this research surprising and also not well talked about? Well, why do you think that liberals do this? The study shows that liberals think that minorities cannot possibly be as erudite as they are. Yeah. So they think they need to be more compassionate and just sort of speak down to them.
Speak to them like at a fifth grade level,
right,
and slowly.
I mean, you guys
are cretins, and
I'm not.
Hey, black person, is it okay if I slow down my speech a little bit? Will that be, you can understand me better there,
right,
and then I'm not as offensive to you as a white person?
Yes, exactly.
Can you handle the speed with which I'm speaking?
In Oregon, they were going to lower standards in schools because they're like, the kids just can't understand this. So we have to like lower it to the lowest common denominator in order to what? I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah. This is the racism of low expectations.
Yes.
This is what we are seeing being played out. It's racism disguised as compassion, and it's wrong. Also, I lived amongst a lot of liberals when I lived in Essex County, New Jersey, which is one of the wealthiest counties in the country, amongst a lot of white liberal women voters. They don't even talk to ethnic minorities unless they are hiring them to watch their kids or clean their houses. So I absolutely have seen this. That's why this Zoom call is so comfortable for them, because they don't have to actually talk to minorities. They can talk for them. It just shows how competent that they think minorities are on their own. And we'll see this later today when President Biden speaks on the anniversary of the civil rights movement. This is a speech that was delayed in the wake of the Trump attempted assassination. He will do a victory lap for the policies that white leaders put in place to save black people from poverty and oppression. Good for them. Only, did you know that black people made most of that progress themselves? It's not for white people to take a victory lap for. This is part of the research of economist Thomas Sowell. He is very much against, he is a black economist, it's worth noting, who is very much against social handouts for any group because it hinders the progress that the data shows that these groups make on their own. This is a summary of Sowell's findings, and I think that it's worth sharing because If we want to, this is from economist Mark Perry sharing this research. If we wanted to be serious about evidence, we might compare where blacks stood 100 years after the end of slavery and where they stood after 30 years of the liberal welfare state. In other words, we could compare hard evidence on the legacy of slavery with hard evidence on the legacy of liberals. Despite the grand myth that black economic progress began or accelerated with the passage of civil rights laws and war on poverty programs of the 60s, the cold fact is that the poverty rate amongst blacks fell from 87% in 1940 to 47% by 1960. This was before any of those programs began. So black people halved their poverty rate on their own 20 years before the civil rights movements were put into place, but we will see President Biden and the Biden administration take a victory lap for what white people did for blacks. Now, why did that happen? It's pretty obvious if you want to look at the data. Sowell explains that blacks are just as competent as every other racial group, Jews, Italians, and Irish. All of those groups show that the first round of immigrants into the U.S. test low on test scores, but each subsequent generation does better as they culturally assimilate and take advantage of American education and prosperity. And so black people have, in fact, been doing that themselves. That is before the Democrats decided to turn them into the welfare state, which is what Democratic policies do. So what is the racism behind telling black people that you need all of these programs in order to succeed? It's interesting, right? And conservatives then are saying, actually, they're equal to us. Let's let them. This was one of the things that I think spoke to me the most about Vivek Ramaswamy's speech, is when he said at the RNC, we want for you what we want for ourselves, clean neighborhoods, good education, and prosperity. And that is actually a conservative ethos, but it's not talked about a lot in the press.
Right. So when white people want to defund the police in inner cities or in predominantly black or other areas, and they don't want to defund the police in their neck of the woods, right? It's, what is it called? Not in my backyard, or NIMBYs.
Oh, NIMBYs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's okay for all these white liberal women to get together on Zoom calls and talk about defunding the police.
Right.
When you look at what it's actually done to these communities,
yeah.
Guess what? Blacks want safer communities.
Right.
Just like white people do.
Yes.
Right? Imagine that.
Yeah.
I know it's shocking. And yes, they want to have the same level and access to the same things that we do.
Right.
Right? And so this should not be a shock, but all these liberal women getting together on Zoom calls.
So what they're saying is that white people are collectively privileged. Well, that's ignoring a lot of the data of some of the poorest communities in the United States. Guess what? Are white in the South. And they pretend that that is not the case so that they can advocate for the other, which they don't have to. What I mean, the probably the income level, the household income level of the people who attended this Zoom call is quite high, and they're thinking that they're privileged because of their skin color. So I could dismantle white privilege too, but we can do that later, because guess what? The Kamala Harris campaign is now moving on to white male privilege. They will have a meeting much like this in the coming week, and they're calling it a space for white dudes to be honest about their role in history. So they want white men to show up.
Oh, Pete Buttigieg is going to be there.
Yes,
I'll sign
Pete
up.
Buttigieg, and be honest with themselves about the role that they've played in their nation's history, both good and bad. Be responsible not just for your actions, but every heinous act committed by a white person. They would never ask any other group to do that on behalf of themselves, but okay. So that's what they're going to do. You see that Democrats absolutely want to segregate us by race and divide. And it's interesting. Now, last week, the New York Post published something about black men who are saying, I don't buy this anymore. I'm not going to buy that white people are my enemy. The government is my enemy. So the narrative is breaking down, but they are going to keep pushing this racially segregated world. So let me know, is this white saviorism what's needed? Or is it neo-racism?
I have a question.
Yeah.
What about all the descendants of the white dudes that fought and died in the Civil War to free the slaves?
Screw
those
guys.
Like, if we're a descendant of... Huh?
Screw those guys.
That's your white privilege talking.
Yeah.
You better just check yourself.
Right.
Well,
check yourself.
Another question then.
Slow down.
Because my great grandparents immigrated from on my mother's side, they came from Costa Rica and Guatemala, and on my father's side, they came from Germany in at like post-World War. Am I responsible for any of this? Or, I mean, there's the whole German thing might be problematic, but yeah. just on the basis of the whiteness, am I responsible for any of this? Even though my family wasn't here for any of it? Okay.
Every day when you wake up, you have to be reminded of your responsibility.
Because based on your skin color, which you won't show us because Philip never turns on his camera, but
we assume you're white.
Right, but he's the brother of David. So we're assuming that you have a similar racial profile as David, who we can see on the screen now. Right. David is not the victim of microaggressions because of his white male privilege. So he is less prone to having hurt feelings, and so we are assuming based on, I mean, that's racist, right? I'm assuming based on the way you look. That's neo-racism.
Yep. I amplify it with my white beard, white glasses, white headphones. Like, I just really
it's too
own
much white.
It's
my
too whiteness. Much white.
Yeah.
White
shirt.
Yeah. You should wear like a, you know, like either wear like a Pride watch band to kind of mix it up a little bit, or wear like a Black History Month watch band, you know,
that's a good
show
idea.
That you're like culturally relevant.
No. I'm going to get a white dudes for Harris hat. Then I'm done. Then I can wear whatever I want.
Okay. Then yeah. So let us know. I mean, I think that this reeks of white saviorism, which is neo-racist. And also, again, it's assuming that people of color are just not capable of speaking for themselves and they need us as allies based on their skin color. I hate it. But let me know if you see any virtue here that I'm missing. What is it that I don't see? Let us know in the chat.